Paul, thank you for making some time with us, man.
Thank you. I don't know. I'm not trying to get in the middle of this. I just saw did you see this Trump tweet about talking to Kevin Warren?
Well, we are in a world where this is absolutely a thing that would happen. When you sit down to talk about college football, the president tweets the following.
Yeah.
Had a very productive conversation with Kevin Warren, commissioner of the Big Ten Conference, about immediately starting up Big Ten football. Would be good, parentheses, great exclamation point for everyone, players, fans, country, on the 1 yard line, exclamation point. So I'm just curious, Paul, are you numb to stuff like this happening at this point?
Yeah, no. To be on the 1 yard line is that means they've covered 99 yards since we started this conversation.
College football has kicked off officially with the first NCAA game completed this past weekend in Alabama in front of a couple thousand fans. And how things play out from here is anyone's guess. Paul Feinbaum joins the show to talk pushback against canceled conferences, star players opting out, and the many, many, many directions this 2020 season could still go. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, September 2nd. This is ESPN Daily. But let's dive into this, Paul Feinbaum, and thank you for joining me. So it is theoretically back to school time, and some college campuses are opening, some are not, some teams are suiting up, some are not. So how would you describe where we are with college football?
This is the most bizarre week one of the season in my lifetime, which encompasses, you know, a long time, in all honesty.
Paul Feinbaum covers college football on the Paul Feinbaum Show, which he's done since time began, or so it seems.
It is utterly bewildering that we are in September now, and there has been a football game, and there'll be more football games, but there's such a cautious approach to it. That's better than no approach, which would mean the season had already been scrubbed, but it is still very tenuous, I would say.
So it's been a few weeks since the Big Ten and Pac-12 canceled fall football due to the pandemic. But every time you look at the Big Ten, there seems to be this mix of both second thoughts and also possibly an all-out culture war. What is happening now with the Big Ten and them clearly thinking about walking back their stance?
I'm still not sure they're thinking about it. We had this coaches call the other day that created a lot of buzz on Twitter, but it really didn't create very much movement. This is a presidential decision. This is not a AD or Ryan Day head football coach decision. So I have a hard time believing that presidents of really great universities who made their decision based on safety within 3.5 weeks are going to say, just kidding, guys.
And you said it's a presidential decision. That's president of the universities, not President Donald Trump. Although clearly it seems like he is putting his thumb on this scale.
Well, you can't take politics out of anything. And since the worst pandemic in 100 years has been politicized in every part of the country, I live in the South where, you know, Pablo, what the view of the virus is. It's completely different than it is in New York or L.A. or even in the Big Ten. Yeah, it's interesting. It's also ironic that this comes out as the president of the United States is flying to Wisconsin, a Big Ten school, let's not lose sight of that, to make, what would have to be considered a political appearance. We're 2 months away from the election. So it all comes together.
When it came to the Big Ten's decision to cancel in the first place, that was fractured from the start. Would you mind walking us through what we know about which schools pushed back and how that has swayed things?
According to the reporting on this lawsuit filed by parents of Nebraska players, it came out Monday of this week that it was an 11-3 vote, which I was really glad to know it was a vote, because there had been so many mixed messages. You had the Minnesota president saying, well, it wasn't a vote per se. You had Sandy Barber of Penn State, the AD, there saying, I'm not really sure there was a vote. And Kevin Warren confusing everyone with his mixed messaging. So I am going to go with the lawsuit and the papers filed by the Big Ten to say there was an 11-3 vote. And the votes were against Iowa, Nebraska, and Ohio State. So everyone else who has claimed to have been for it is only speaking for themselves, that ultimately the presidents of this league are the final arbiters.
And I can tell, Paul Feinbaum, messages are flying in from everywhere. I assume your various computers and cell phones are lighting up with some updates as we talk here.
I have officially now turned my phone off.
Paul, I want to take you back to your initial response to the Big Ten's waffling. And you said this: what a laughingstock this league has become. 5 weeks ago, the Big Ten was considered the gold standard in big-time college football. And now it's the punchline to almost any joke you can think of. You also had issues with how Kevin Warren, the aforementioned conference commissioner, handled the situation. So how badly have Warren and the conference bungled this in your estimation now?
Very poorly. Everything I said there, I still stand by, which is unusual nowadays in our business. It started from the very beginning. So the story comes out on a Tuesday, nearly a month ago. You know, Kevin Warren did an interview with the Big Ten Network, maybe the biggest moment in Big Ten history. And the problem was Warren just wasn't saying anything. Instead of saying, we made the decision because of this, we were not unified, but we will walk away from here as one conference. He talked like the person he is, a lawyer. And just a terrible presentation. Before the dust had even settled, before the Pac-12 had even announced what they were doing, which came about 50 minutes later, the criticism was already ratcheting up. What are they doing here at the Big Ten? Why did they make this decision? The Pac-12, which never seems to do anything right, had a group of college presidents, administrators, and some infectious disease specialists do a webinar, which made a lot of sense. They were very clear in their presentation. You understood why. There's a million cliches about you only get one chance to make a first impression, but it was a terrible first impression for most of us with Kevin Warren, who I have not yet acknowledged is in his first year.
Yeah.
As the Big Ten commissioner, following the legendary career of Jim Delaney, who was arguably the most powerful person in all of college sports.
The other three Power Five conferences are, of course, fascinating here because they did not fall like dominoes after the Big Ten and Pac-12 made their decision.
The ACC is set to kick off its season roughly 2 weeks from today on September 10th, followed by the Big 12 on September 12th. The SEC is the lone Power 5 conference playing an all-conference schedule, which is set to begin on September 26th.
So what does peer pressure have to do with all of this when it comes to the rest of the Power 5?
What's interesting, Pablo, is the morning of August 11th, I don't think anyone was really sure we would have a college football season the next day. To go down, and then all eyes are on the Big 12. And the Big 12 decided we are going to play, which gave the other two, the SEC and the ACC, a drafting partner, to use a crass NASCAR phrase. As the criticism reigned, remember, the next day you had coaches who were outraged. Franklin of Penn State, Jim Harbaugh, Ryan Day. And then the most important moment came a couple of days later when Justin Fields, the best-known player in the Big Ten, started this online petition where he gathered close to 300,000 signatures.
I just think we're finally now realizing how big of a voice we have. And I think COVID and delaying the season or canceling the season, I think that hasn't sit well on a lot of, you know, college football players around the country.
At that point, their messaging was over. Their cause had been lost. And the worst thing that could have happened for them was their decision and the reaction emboldened the SEC, the Big 12, and the ACC to fight on.
I think if the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 all think that they can have a season safely, then I don't see any reason why the Big 10 can do the same.
I don't think they had been thinking about packing it in, but instead of being more cautious, I think they were more intrigued now and more inspired. and motivated to keep going. So that's the mess that occurred, and it has continued to get worse, because about 8 days later, Kevin Warren, the commissioner, who, by the way, has a son playing at Mississippi State, the optics there really made him even more awkward, tried to explain it again, and he failed, and he still hasn't gotten it right. And there's one more thing I'll say about all this that really brings this home or crystallizes it. In the state of Ohio, Ohio State is the biggest go-to on a Saturday afternoon. You have the University of Cincinnati that is still playing. You have the two professional teams, the Bengals and the Browns. And you have high school football underway. The only significant football entity in the state of Ohio that isn't going to be playing on Saturday afternoons is the biggest name, the Ohio State University.
Wow. Well, it won't be that way, Paul Feinbaum, if Donald Trump's tweet is correct. So let's just play this thought experiment out, because Trump has talked with Kevin Warren, and this idea of starting the Big Ten season up again, whether it's a late start or quote unquote immediately per the president, how does this all even work?
Again, I don't cover the White House. I see the president's tweets like we all do. And, you know, the fact that the president would indicate that they would start immediately is probably news to a lot of people, but they've already shut down. So to get everyone back, you would have to recalibrate your schedule. You can't just start tomorrow. And frankly, I don't think it's feasible. Now, I don't know what was said in that conversation. I mean, obviously, we've heard from the president. I'd like to hear from Kevin Warren. But I still don't think it's going to happen. I still don't believe they want to play. So, not to quote Shakespeare and say that the president's tweet may have been a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing, but it could have been.
Paul, coming up, let's step away from the mess in the Big Ten to take a look at how the rest of the college football landscape is unfolding amid all this sound and fury before week one.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Okay, Paul, so beyond the Big Ten's indecision, we've also had some other names who turn out to not want to play this year. We have players preparing for the 2021 NFL draft who are pulling out of college football, which isn't shocking in retrospect, but what's the impact of these players saying they're not going to play football this season now that it's all actually happening?
I thought originally this was something that we were hearing about in August, but just this week alone, the best offensive and the best defensive player at LSU, which happens to be the national champion, have both opted out.
These are some heavy, heavy hitters choosing to opt out. But when it's the best skill guy on the defending national champions, whoa, people take notice.
So it tells you that some of these players are growing weary of the protocols, growing weary of the buildup, and are looking around and seeing COVID cases building on campuses, especially among students, and saying, why bother? I could be working with a trainer in relative safety, or certainly safetier, safer, excuse me, not to make up a word here, and then on a college campus playing football when I don't really need it. Jamar Chase this week was certainly the most significant. He's the best wide receiver in football and considered to be a top five pick in the draft.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Chase in particular, because that headline, for the reasons you said, logically, I understood it. But what's the impact there on LSU, for instance?
LSU is down to six starters from the team that won the national championship against Clemson in January. I've never seen a school lose more players than this one. And then, by the way, they're still ranked in the top six in the country. In addition to losing the best quarterback in school history, Joe Burrow, they lost their two best wide receivers. They've lost countless numbers of defensive players. And they've also lost their two coordinators from last year.
Right.
Brady, who went to the Panthers in the NFL, and Dave Aranda, who was arguably the best defensive coordinator in college football last year, who's now the head coach of Baylor. So, I mean, this has been a wipeout. I still think there'll be more. I mean, the SEC doesn't start for 3 weeks, so I think that's the one to keep your eye on in terms of players saying, you know what, once they start seeing the NFL next week, you may see a few more. I think it's highly likely. The one thing I am somewhat concerned about is what is it going to look like? And I realize we're used to it by now. We've seen NASCAR events with no fans and golf with no fans and baseball and the NBA. But college football is that one unique entity where fans are almost as important a part of the festivities as what happens on the field. And there is no place more treasured or coveted or sacrosanct than Tiger Stadium on a Saturday night with 12,000 fans when Alabama shows up here in about 2 months is not going to be the same as they were hoping for.
Speaking of Alabama LSU, earlier in August, Paul, Nick Saban warned against college football even happening in the spring, saying, quote, "One of the real consequences of this, if you're a junior or a senior and you have an NFL grade, are you going to play in the spring? Or is that going to become sort of a JV season with a lot of these juniors and seniors opting out? Do you think that fear is going to be realized?"
Yeah, I think in that one moment, Nick Saban finished off the spring for most people. I was sitting about to go on Get Up right after he was on, and I just shook my head. Nick Saban doesn't say anything without having thought about it. That was an intentional shot. He knew what he was doing. I mean, he basically rendered spring football next year, if the Big Ten or Pac-12 or anyone else decides to go through with it, as college football's version of the XFL. He was sending a message out, especially to recruits who are thinking about going to a Big Ten school. Hey, don't waste your time. Come on down to see me.
Well, here's the other aspect of that question now, because given that Ja'Marr Chase is out, Micah Parsons at Penn State, the linebacker that you alluded to, the best defensive player in the nation, he's out. Kenny Gainwell in Memphis, Rashad Bateman in Minnesota. Does the fall have a flavor of JV to you, given the young stars that have opted out?
I don't think so. And I would counter that by saying, are you going to be less interested in watching the Patriots in 2 weeks because they've had six or seven key players? Ultimately, there are a few stars in college football, Trevor Lawrence being the biggest. I would say Justin Fields is next, but I don't think that would be enough to turn people off. Right now, I think there is such a hunger to see college football. You know, whether that continues after a few weeks when we get a good taste of it, I don't know. But right now, I don't think that will be enough.
You had mentioned before that Nick Saban says nothing without deliberation preceding it. And he also wielded his power this week, rhetorically, when he led his Alabama team on a march for justice and change in Tuscaloosa. So, Paul, how are we seeing the political climate in this country around racial justice shape what's happening in these college programs? And how are we seeing it shape these player decisions?
There was a time when you would not get support from coaches. That time is long past. And I think that's one of the most positive aspects of this summer of discontent in the country. Most people said Nick Saban did that for his recruiting and for his team. But he also did it to send a message to his fan base. This is okay. I host a show that is deeply rooted in Alabama and the South. what Saban did there will quiet a lot of people in that part of the country, because as he was doing it, we had a complaint from somebody in South Alabama saying Nick Saban's making the biggest mistake of his life. And I said, I don't think so. But it shows you the disconnect between the old South and really where we are today. And I think a lot of people looked at that, and whether deep down they understood it or not, whether they embraced it or not, because Nick Saban is the most influential figure in that state.
It's hard to think, Paul, of a figure, of a messenger, who would be better suited to this than Nick Saban, given the fact that he is a man who is trusted implicitly as a leader of men, but also has not been especially politically outspoken previous to this. Were you surprised to see Saban be out front leading that march?
No. And I say that because you're right. He is not overly political. I've asked him countless times about running for public office. His best friend, by the way, is a Democratic senator from West Virginia, Joe Manchin. They grew up together. And it just so happens that a coach who Saban ran out of the business is on the verge of becoming this senator from Alabama, Tommy Tuberville, who was once at Auburn. I think Nick Saban understands his role. He may have gone about this in reverse, going, can I afford not to, to make a stance? I really would like to hear more from Saban in expounding on his decision. But, you know, he did what a lot of other coaches have done and are currently doing, but he just happens to be the best known. And he also did it better than Dabo Swinney. If you remember, Dabo Swinney was very clumsy last summer at the beginning of this summer in the immediate aftermath of George Floyd's murder.
What I know is that where there are people, there's going to be hate. There's going to be racism and greed and jealousy and crime and so on, because we live in a sinful, fallen world.
He ultimately was able to undo that by standing arm in arm with Trevor Lawrence and everyone else on that Clemson football team. Saban stayed out of that fray for the most part, but this time he took great leadership.
Two days ago, Paul, I mean, this is your province here. Alabama reported that over 1,000 students have tested positive for COVID since classes have resumed. When you take in a headline like that, how do you react, and how do you think the football program and the sports industrial complex at Alabama reacts?
Well, I think at a lot of schools, the football coaches are actually rooting for classes to be shut down, as crazy as that may sound. They think it's safer. They only care about themselves. Those are scary headlines, Bob. I agree. And it's even more curious when you start seeing reports from individual students on that Alabama campus say that the university is not doing enough. I still think that's to be determined. And I say that because if these numbers can slow down, then we're talking here purely from a football standpoint, we get to see the season. If they blow up, then it puts more pressure on these presidents who then have to decide, is it okay if I send my campus home, if everything is done remotely? Is it then okay to say, it's still okay to have a college football season, even though you can't find a classroom, a professor, or a student anywhere in sight?
Yeah, a lot of philosophical questions spring forth when you wonder, well, what is a college athlete without actual college?
It's 2020.
Paul Feinbaum, thank you so much for joining us, and best of luck navigating the rest of this year.
Thank you, Pablo. It's a pleasure. It really is.
As the Rockets and Thunder head to a pivotal Game 7, Chris Paul has shown the world that he'll do almost anything to win. We'll talk with a guy who knows that firsthand.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Here's another story I want you to know. One could argue that tonight's Game 7 between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Houston Rockets is happening exclusively because of the work and skill of Chris Paul. In Game 6, Paul had 15 of his 28 points in the fourth quarter to force Game 7.
Paul's had a big half as well, played a ton of minutes. Now another three-pointer is up. Oh, Chris Paul! What a big shot for Chris Paul again!
And now everyone is taking note of how unbelievable Paul has been against his old team, including his old nemesis, former NBA player Julius Hodge. You may recall that Hodge shared an infamous moment with Paul when CP may or may not, definitely did punch Julius Hodge in the groin.
And we've got an injury.
Julius Hodge down
on the baseline.
Yeah, he got hit in a rather sensitive area is the best way to phrase it. That actually could be characterized as a punch.
Yes, it could.
Hodge says he hasn't agreed to answer questions about this incident for 10 years now. But he did agree to join ESPN Daily to finally give us a scouting report on the one man he still can't escape. So if anyone on this planet has an understandable vendetta against Chris Paul, it is Julius Hodge. And we're going to get into all of that soon. But I'm curious to know, first off, what's it been like to watch Chris play in this series against the Rockets?
I mean, he's making every play for the Thunder. I mean, he's getting in the paint. He's finding guys. He's hitting a long distance shot. I especially love how he's getting his payback against the Rockets and James Harden.
Well, I know that you probably agree. Revenge is a dish best served cold. So before we get any further into the present, let's get in the time machine and go back to the fateful moment. Take us through your memory of what exactly happened on the court. You're at NC State. He's at Wake Forest.
So it's my senior night. So the school has a huge celebration. It's a sellout crowd, a sea of red. My bobblehead, everyone in the stadium got one of my bobbleheads. I mean, my mom is in the stands, my big brother. It's awesome. And it's a hard-fought game. But a shot went up, and I'm just boxing him out. I never talk trash to him. Like, when I tell you I was a fan as a player, that's how much respect I have for him. So the shot went up and he got me. And I was just like, bro, what are you doing? So, I mean, I was a bit pissed at the moment. But, I mean, the dude is really such a competitor. And I know NC State fans are going to kill me for saying this. But it was a part of me that I respected the "I would do anything it takes to win" side of it. I mean, you got to love that.
So, Julius, I want to be fair and balanced here because it's not just you that was Chris Paul's victim in this way. He also hit Ben McLemore in the groin in Game 3.
Looked almost harmless from our angle. Well, he had that elbow.
I saw him do that once in an ACC tournament, and he got ejected for it.
I want to know this. Even if you're not watching basketball, right? You're Julius Hodge. You're at home. Maybe you're doing the dishes or something. When your phone explodes with messages and notifications on Twitter, do you already know what just has happened? Do you know that another member of this exclusive club has just joined?
It's unbelievable because it's every time. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. Like, I'm coaching here, college basketball at San Jose State, or I can be on the stock market looking at small cap companies. And I'm looking at my phone and I'm like, what the hell has he done? But he admitted this time.
I tried to get by him. It was incidental. I know when I did it on purpose, I was in college.
Every other time he's done it since me has been a mistake. But for me, it was on purpose.
Well, Julius Hodge, you are a portrait in forgiveness, because when I asked to talk to you, I did not think you would be able to compliment the man who did this to you. But it sounds like you are pretty fair and balanced yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Just as long as CP stands for maybe Chris Punch or Crotch Punch.
I just caught every level of entendre that you just threw at me. And, sir, I applaud you.
Nah, I appreciate it, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.